MEMGO Podcast 10.26. Racket, don't lie. So we'll get to a certain unpleasantness later in the broadcast, the podcast, the broad podcast, the Bratwurst cast. That's probably what.
That's a good name for this one.
Well, it's more of a Wisconsin thing. Anyway, it's tourney time.
Yes.
So
national tourney.
National tourney.
National tourney time.
No more Big Ten.
Michigan has gotten a 2 seed and got the, I think, the draw that people wanted.
Yeah, for the last 2 seed, it's not too bad.
The last 2 seed. What a
what a concept.
What a weird thing. Like, so State was the top 2 seed.
Right.
And they put him against Duke.
Yeah.
Did they put him closer?
I mean, you're not supposed to do that, though. Like, it's not good for Duke either, right? Like, they're supposed to get...
Well, they're punishing Duke for losing to UNC.
They're the number one overall seed. So, Michigan avoids Duke, which I think was priority one. They get put in the West, and the regional is in Anaheim. And last year we were in LA, and those were home games.
So it's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like the major coastal city Michigan effect, especially LA and New York. And so Michigan is probably going to have an advantage in terms of crowd for the regionals. And, you know, amongst the 1 seeds, like, I guess I kind of wanted UNC more because we've already beaten them. And they're so transition dependent. But, like, I'd rather have Gonzaga than Duke or Virginia.
I think not getting Duke is always good.
But we should probably talk about the first couple rounds.
How about our sponsors?
Yeah, we should talk about our sponsors first.
Fine. If you guys insist. Our sponsors are Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Hometure Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, The Residence in Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, Lantana Hummus, and the Phil Klein Insurance Group. So, do you think they did this on purpose? I mean, they gave Michigan a rematch.
I thought we discussed. Year. I thought we all agreed. We came together after that game and said we're never discussing that game again.
Maybe
that's what prompted this.
There's a Slack bot thing. I don't know if it's come up yet in our Slack bot, but there's a Slack bot on our Slack chat that anytime someone writes the name Montana, it pops up and says we agreed to never discuss that again.
Well, I guess we have to. So one of the things that sticks out when you look at the statistical profile of the Grizzlies is last year they had a couple of 6'8 guys, and that's how they kind of stayed afloat against major competition.
Right.
One of those guys graduated. Another one went out for the year halfway through the season. So their center for most of the year was 6'7". And as a result, you know, they had a pretty good defense last year. It was like top 60. They've fallen 100 spots.
So it's not going to be the same sort of team we faced last year.
I mean, I imagine that they're probably still trapping ball screens, and that's going to be something that gives Michigan some issues, but they're just going to, I mean, how are they going to check Teske? How are they going to check Iggy?
Right.
These guys are basically all wings and smaller. Like, even their center is like 195. They don't have a guy who weighs 200 on the team. So
that's pretty light.
It is. So they didn't play basically anyone all year. They lost to every top 100 team they played. They lost to Creighton by 26. They lost to Arizona by 19.
And neither of those teams are in the tournament.
That's correct. They were top 100 teams in KenPom, but then they had a couple other closer losses against smaller conference teams.
Arizona's number 99. I mean, they're
also wow, that's top 100.
That's like a Minnesota top 50 top, recruit.
Right.
So this doesn't look like it has the potential to be quite as annoying. Just because last year they had a defense that was actually good, and we saw how that was a problem for Michigan.
Yeah, that first half was.
Right. And this year they're just too small to compete. So that was a 3 versus 14 matchup that by the end of it kind of felt like it because they just couldn't score in any way whatsoever. And I don't see how that's going to change.
No, not without some sort of infusion of offense from them. And Michigan's defense is probably better.
Yes.
So
I mean, they're 137th on KenPom, So
yeah,
vastly worse than the worst team in the Big Ten by like 50 or 60 spots probably now.
So, now that the end of the Big Ten has semi-resurrected right. itself.
So like this is not a 2 that you're looking, a 15 you're looking at and being like, oh, these guys could be frisky. Because they're just too small. I mean, they shoot decently, but I mean, against guys who are not Charles Matthews.
You did write down that they force a lot of ISO ball, though.
Yeah, they're very good at preventing assists on made baskets. I think that has a lot to do with, that's why I think they're still trapping. Obviously, we're doing this immediately after the bracket reveal, so I haven't had time to like go scout
super deep
Montana games.
You didn't watch a lot of Montana
games
this year.
I didn't have the
that
opportunity.
Big Montana South Dakota State.
I did not. but they are top 30 in terms of preventing assists on made baskets, and Michigan is terrible at ISO ball. So there is that kind of looming. How are we going to do this? But you know, they're playing mostly teams in the 200s in KenPom, so this is going to be a whole different world for them.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, that's what they force. But it's not like Michigan doesn't have players who can't do it. They're just not haven't been great at it. They have like Iggy can put the ball on the floor, Poole can put the ball on the floor, things like that. But then you have to think at the other end, what are they going to do against Michigan's defense?
Well, extrapolating from a game that didn't happen because we agreed not to talk about it.
We have to talk about it. We just talked about it.
It took Michigan a long time to kind of probe and find those matchups, but they were there. They've got like a couple guys on there who are just shooters, and on the defensive side, they're going to be taking advantage of one.
Montana couldn't get somewhere. A good shot up the whole game.
No.
I don't think that's going to change because this is pretty much the same outfit that they played, except they lost their 2-6-8 guys. So like those guys are back this year because, I mean, you're not going to the NBA, right?
Yeah.
So they're good Big Sky players, but they couldn't get anything done last year, and this is pretty much the same Michigan defense, like at 3 of the 5 spots. So
yeah, and Iggy's not bad on defense by any means, and Poole. Is a good athlete. So
the second round is much more interesting because it has Nevada, who's 25th on KenPom. And if you're just like pretending that that's how you're seeding a tournament, 25th would be like the top 7 seed. But actually, Louisville is like 17th, and some other 7 seed is 19th.
You thought the 7s were under seed Cincinnati, I think.
I mean, it looks if you just go by KenPom, which you shouldn't do when you seed a tournament.
Okay.
But like if we're talking about like what kind of draw Michigan got, like Nevada is kind of bang on what you would expect from a 7 seed. Yeah,
they're actually the third because Wofford's a 7 seed as well.
Right. Wofford is like 19th in KenPom.
Yeah. And then Cincinnati's the other one, which is right below them.
The only thing that kind of gives me pause is that a large portion of why they're 25th in KenPom was like the one game where they lost to New Mexico by 38
right.
points.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just the, like, this was when Michigan and Nevada were, like, competing to be the last undefeated team in the country.
Right.
And that was the one that they gacked it up on.
Well, they lost by
38 points. 30 points. To, like, what
New Mexico. At New Mexico.
New Mexico or New Mexico State? Because New Mexico State made the tournament.
New Mexico.
Oh.
The number 183 team in KenPom. And God knows what they would be without that game. So maybe like on balance they were a better team and they just I don't know what happened.
They didn't lose again until February 20th.
But they haven't played anybody.
Right. They just haven't really lost anybody.
So the only top 50 team Nevada played was Utah State, who's worth 34th and did make the tournament, but they were 1-1 against them, and I don't know if you guys remember this, but they lost at Utah State.
Right.
And then, like, the students rush the court and all this stuff, and there's, like, this crazy video afterwards of Jordan Caroline, who's pretty much their top player, although they're pretty balanced.
He's hurt, by the way.
Maybe. Well, just 1 second about that. But, like, he's, like, breaking glass, and everybody's screaming, and, like the coaches are, like, yelling at the cops that, like, they need to protect him, and...
This is in the locker room?
It's or like outside the locker room. It's like as soon as they get off the court.
Okay, so this is under
the tunnel?
Under the tunnel. All right.
Which apparently is called a vomitorium.
Yes.
Which I when I think vomitorium, what I think is Romans throwing up after an orgy. But right. I
Yes, I can see how that would be confusing, but it vomits out the people. Is what
that
they were going for with it.
Seems like a really unlikely thing.
Well, you have to go back and think this way. They had a term for like spitting out a lot of people. and then someone who was trying to think of a nice way to say throw up came up with vomitorium. So like all these, all, the name for barfing
came from that.
Came from that. They were trying to find a nice way to say barfing.
Why do you know this? Was this hardcore history?
Why do you know this?
No, this is just.
What, do you not know Seth? This is the kind of stuff he knows.
No, this is not the kind of stuff that anybody knows.
I should introduce you to Seth sometime.
I agree that Seth would be high on the list of people who would know this.
Exactly.
But that's still...
I don't even remember where this one comes from. There have been too many late nights with Wikipedia.
Weren't you an English history major or something like that?
Yes.
So, you go.
So vomit came from vomitorium.
Well, and the root.
Right.
Right. So the root vomit was a, you know, expel out.
So anyway, Nevada's in the vomitorium. And, like, the coaches are screaming, and Caroline is, like, breaking glass and screaming about how he's a man. And then they, like, do an investigation, and the thing that happened was it wasn't the students coming onto the floor. It was, like, Utah State assistant coaches in the handshake line.
That, like, ran their mouths, or they, like,
I don't know what
them.
They did. Nothing was specified.
Earl.
But, like, I don't know.
So now we have a conspiracy.
It's very strange.
I mean, you guys have
probably has no bearing on our game with them. If we,
you don't want to keep breaking this down,
but I just,
I mean, Jordan Caroline gets upset about assistant coaches saying something to him. Like, what's going to happen?
I'm going to do Bob back on the sideline.
No, I'm just saying, what happens when he gets a hook shot in his face from X?
Michigan does trash talk a lot. I think that, you know, he's probably played basketball before, so someone trash talking to him is be like, all right, that's I can deal.
Someone
with
has
this.
Used a word tougher than vomitorium
but
in
you,
his presence.
But you mentioned that.
Yeah, so he missed the San Diego State game in their tournament, and that's why they lost. They lost by 10 to San Diego State. Without him, he had a flare up in his Achilles.
Okay.
So I don't know if that was a precautionary thing before the tournament, or it sounded like it was a thing that had been bothering him, and then they just right before just decided to keep him out.
And this isn't to the San Diego State that was kind of good for a little while. This was
no
regular.
This is
mediocre
121st
San Diego State
to Ken Pom.
Right.
Yeah.
And then like the Mountain West was not good this year. They had the two teams, and then everybody else was like bad.
Yeah.
So they have a gaudy record, but it's more of a major gaudy record.
They were expected to be good at the beginning of the season.
Like, yeah, I mean, people were hyping them up as a top five team, and then, you know, they lost a few games. They didn't play anyone all season, and they've kind of like landed on the 7 line.
And they had that back and forth with Michigan for a while, like who's going to be the first team to lose. And I think they maybe lost like a couple hours before we did.
Yeah, we already talked about this, the 38-point loss to like New Mexico.
Yes, that was it. That was the one then.
So in terms of what kind of team they are, they have a 5'10 point guard who's a sniper. He's 45% from three, and that's a lot of their efficiency, and I'm happy about that because you get a short guy who can't really shoot over X, and X is just going to eat him up probably.
Yeah, that's a good matchup for X.
And the rest of their team is wings, basically. Like they have a bunch of 6'7 guys and a 6'8 guy. He's not listed as a starter on KenPom. But they do have a kid named Porter who's 6'11" and plays center for them.
Sometimes.
He's like a 20-minute-per-game guy. So he doesn't have great endurance. He's a little bit foul-prone. But he's a shot blocker. He gets the line and he shoots like 64%. So, you know, a guy who is an actual center to match up against Teske, but for only half the game. There's going to be an opportunity for Livers to play center, which I like.
Yeah.
Because he's much better at that five spot than anyone else if he's got a 6'7" guy to match up with, like Juwan Morgan.
Right. No, that went really well. But so how many of these wings would you say that Nevada recruited?
They have so many transfers. Like, Caroline's a transfer, I think. And like, they're very old, so like four of their five starters are seniors. And since they have so many transfers, a lot of those guys are like 23.
Nice.
So they're going to be very, very mature, except after the Utah State game.
I think a couple of them are from North Carolina State.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's hard to judge exactly how good they are because, as mentioned, they had the incredible blowout loss, but they're 29-4 otherwise, but they haven't played anybody.
Yeah, so they lose to San Diego State when the one guy gets hurt, and they get blown out in a game, and then all pretty much peanuts after that.
Yeah, and they have one top 50 win all year. And, like, Michigan has just played, like, 20 straight games against top 50 teams, and then Rutgers was sprinkled in.
Yeah.
So I'm not too concerned about
I mean, the greater concern would be if Caroline's hurt, that Florida gets by them. I'm not that worried about Florida.
I'm way less concerned. Wouldn't you?
I was about to say, yeah. Aren't we kind of rooting for Florida?
I mean, that was...
Yeah, a 19-14 SEC team, the Indiana of the SEC. Yeah, I think that's what
Indiana beat Michigan State twice.
I know, but they didn't
Florida
beat us.
Only got LSU once, and it was in overtime.
And Florida actually lost to Michigan.
Well, and Florida's very small too. They have a 6'9" center, but the power forward they roll out there is like 6'5", and he's kind of a burly Jordan Murphy type, but that doesn't really scare me.
Hasn't all year.
And they take a ton of threes.
But they don't make them or something?
Yeah, they take a ton of threes and they don't make very many.
That seems like it's time to find a new plan.
They're like 200th in shooting three in shooting, but they take top 53. So
I would have taken Indiana over them.
Probably, yeah. And then their defense is it's a very up-tempo, high-pressure defense. So they block a lot of shots. They force a lot of turnovers. And that's, VCU, right? Like, that's a recipe for complete destruction at the hands of Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan will break that. And then they also, you said, give up a lot of offensive rebounds.
Yeah, because they're trying to swat every shot.
Sure, like, force turnovers.
That's not a disadvantage that Michigan takes too much advantage of.
I assume they probably foul then.
Yeah, I mean, Teske is a guy who, if you leave him to go try to block a shot, he's a big body who can grab some offensive rebounds. So I think he might be able to get some putbacks. But, like, Florida is like, yes, please.
Yeah.
Nevada, there's a lot of uncertainty about them. They didn't play anybody. They're 25th. In KenPom.
And they all have experienced players.
Yeah, so that could be a pretty dangerous game. Like, I think they deserve to be a 7, and I'm not, like, unhappy with the fact that there are the 7 in our pod, but, like, Florida is much, much preferable.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. And they have a familiar face.
Well, Noah Locke, if you remember, Michigan was recruiting him and kind of fell off the radar there. He's pretty much just a shooter so far. He has a Teske-ish TO rate. He's like second in the country. I saw his name because I was looking up John Teske stats on KenPom. I'm like, oh yeah, that guy. So he just sits in the corner and shoots threes, basically.
Yeah, but his assist rate is exactly what his turnover rate is. So that, right. Yeah, that's a guy who's getting the ball and putting it up.
So he's probably the one guy that can shoot on that team.
I mean, they have a few guys who can, like, do it decently. They're not horrible. Like, they're 200th, they're not 300th.
Okay.
But they're highly dependent on knocking down threes, and that's a bad matchup.
And Michigan runs you off the line like crazy.
Right, yeah. So what are they going to do? Especially because they don't have a whole lot of size. So, I mean, I think Florida's probably going to get pounded by Nevada. But, like, the clear preference for Michigan is that they get Florida.
Yeah, I mean, it's whether or not guys injure or not.
Well, Caroline, that does kind of bring some question into it, but Nevada is pretty balanced. So Caroline is their highest usage guy, but they have a couple more guys in the 18-22 range. I don't think that they would be completely devastated by losing him. Obviously, it's not good to lose a starter, but...
I mean, I'm going off the fact they just lost to San Diego State by 10 without him.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
It's not good.
It's a pretty bad loss. It is a pretty bad loss. Again, San Diego State would be 50 slots worse than any Big Ten team on KenPom. So, all right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to talk about the other half of the bracket. Well, the other 12 teams outside of Michigan's pod. We're going to talk about Gonzaga and their ilk.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hey, this is Seth from MGoBlog. Like many of you by now, when it was time to refinance my house, I talked to Matt Demarest in HomeSure Lending. Since we had bought only a few years earlier, it was amazing how different the experience was between Matt and our bank. He knows his stuff, gives you and your loan his personal attention, and can shop with different lenders so you're always a priority. We are constantly getting similar feedback from readers who used HomeSure Lending when buying or refinancing a house in Michigan. He knows the mortgage industry well, which becomes a big deal when your loan is as complicated as mine was. If you're buying or refinancing, reach out to HomeSure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGo Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGo financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
As I mentioned at the beginning of the first segment, like, I'm very happy to be going to the West. And this is the dumbest thing, is that the way that they do these things is that if you're on the 2 line and you're the top 2, they just send you to the closest regional.
Right.
So because, like, Washington, D.C. was, like, 100 miles closer to Michigan State than, like, I don't remember.
Des Moines.
Kansas City.
They got put in Duke's regional. So it doesn't make any sense.
And congratulations, but they got some, you know, alumni out there.
And, you know, Gonzaga is a good team, but Spokane is 1,500 miles away from Anaheim, and Michigan has a huge fan base, and they have a really small fan base. So if that Elite Eight matchup does in fact happen, that'll be very, very good for Michigan in terms of fan support. But
on the court,
well, you know, they're kind of like Nevada, where they have this gaudy record. They beat Duke. They lost to Tennessee.
They have some potential NBA guys, I think.
Yeah, they lost to UNC, and then they get into their conference, and it's just like, well, that's it.
Do you win by 25 or do you win by 45?
Right.
They did lose by 13 to St. Mary's in the tournament.
Right, and then...
But that's like one game in, like, what, 25? I mean, that's going to happen.
How many top 100 programs are there in the WCC?
This St. Mary's is like the only team they played since Duke and Tennessee and North Carolina. Like, after they got in the conference...
San Francisco, who's 66th, and St. Mary's is decent. BYU. Are like, so there's some decent teams, but you know, one seed is a one seed, and I'm relatively unscared of Gonzaga, especially because they have some hurdles to leap before they even get to a potential regional final. I mean, if you are a one seed and you see Syracuse pop up on the 8 line, I mean,
it doesn't really matter what kind of year they've had. It's just Syracuse being Syracuse.
Right. So you're going to have to go up against that 2-3 zone, and we saw what it did to Michigan State last year. Didn't they make a run to the Final Four as a first four team or something?
I mean, I don't think they got that far, but they won a couple games, and like, everybody's long, right? They always have some absurdly long guys. That you have to shoot over.
And that's with Gonzaga too. Their offense is based off of Brandon Clark getting down to the lane, And Syracuse just doesn't let anybody in. You just have to shoot over them most of the time or pick the zone apart. So it's a bad matchup for a team that's kind of leaning on.
I mean, I think that this Gonzaga team is pretty good, though. I mean, they're one of the best teams Gonzaga's ever
they
had.
They certainly have the ability to shoot over it, too.
And they have a number of guys that...
I'm not saying that Syracuse should be favored in that game. I'm just saying, like, if I was a one seed and I saw Syracuse pop up in the 8-9 game, I'd be like... But from a perspective of someone across the bracket in the two spot, that's a really good team for them to pop up. This happened in 2014. So Michigan got bracketed with Wichita State when they were a one seed.
Yes, they did.
And then Kentucky was the 8. And who do we see in the regional final? Kentucky.
And who did we would have rather seen in the regional final?
Well, I mean, based on their play over the course of the season, I would rather have seen Kentucky. And, you know, Michigan played an even game with them and got...
They also had... Well, their center was out, I think, hurt.
No, they were playing Julius Randle that year.
Willie Cauley-Stein was out.
Well, Randle, I mean, it's Kentucky. What does it matter?
Yeah, I guess.
But, like... If you're asking me if I'd rather play Gonzaga or Syracuse, I'd rather play Syracuse.
Well, okay, that's a little bit different. But then you would have to watch Tyus Battle.
That's fine. Tyus Battle just drives in the lane and puts up terrible shots because that's all Syracuse does.
He won't send you on a...
There was the Sam Vecenie thing where he surveyed a bunch of college coaches about NBA prospects.
Right.
And they got to Battle and literally, like, there were like 7 takes on Battle and 6 of them were like, yeah, they don't run any offense. They don't do anything.
Yeah.
But that's not new.
I love that game because then Battle has to watch Michigan. Like, well, here's where you could be right now.
I mean, after that article, I flipped on Syracuse and I was just like, oh my God, they're right. They don't do anything. They just throw the ball on the perimeter until it's time for Battle to go ISO. And it's like they don't screen. They don't down screen. They don't pin screen. They don't do anything. They do nothing. They do no things.
We should probably talk about some other teams other than Syracuse.
All right, fine. So the 3 that Michigan will get in a worst-case scenario should they reach the Sweet 16 is Texas Tech. Texas Tech is, Michigan and Texas Tech have been, like, passing the number one defense in the country baton back and forth all year.
Yeah.
So don't expect a pretty one.
So Michigan has had this thing with Nevada as to who's going to lose first, and they've had a thing with Texas Tech as to...
That one went all year, though.
Who's going to have a better slash worse defense?
The really strange thing is that they have a grad transfer center who was at St. John's.
Hmm.
And it's like, who's grad transferring from St. I mean, St. John's is in the tournament. Like, what does St. John's look like?
Weren't they like the last team in?
I know, but like this kid has like the number 11 block rate in the country.
Yeah.
And like...
I mean, but that's probably why he ended up at Texas Tech.
Well, what I'm saying is like Lubbock...
Well, okay.
You're going from New York City to Lubbock, and like your team is like decent.
Yeah, but like, you're going to a team that last year they were like a 3 seed, right? And they made an Elite 8 run.
I know, but like you're on St. John's team. You're starting. You're a pretty good player. You can probably feel that your team comeback is pretty good, and you're no like nope. Gonna go to a town where the only restaurant is McDonald's. I don't get it. I don't get it.
I think they have other players on the team as well, right?
They do. Jared Culver is their top guy. He's like a 30% usage guy.
He's not number 2 to KenPom. Or like the number 2 on KenPom player
of
the year this
year. Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
I think that some players have learned how to break KenPom.
I mean, he's not super high usage. He's not super high efficient.
Super high, pretty high assist rate.
But he's a potential lottery pick.
He is, but like, so if you're asking me, like, what do I like to see in an opponent... They're highly dependent on a guy who's going to be checked by Charles Matthews.
Yes, and he's over 30% of their usage.
Right, so this kind of reminds me of, I mean, obviously the Houston game last year was not a blowout in favor of Michigan, but Manbun, like, came in and, like, he had a hard time. So this is either going to be, you know, Michigan hits some shots and kind of runs away with it, or just one of these... knockdown, drag out fights. And I don't think, I mean, the thing that I don't want to see in the tournament is a team that can switch, right? Switch 1-5.
We've seen that.
Right. That's like kryptonite for Michigan, especially this year. Every year it's kryptonite, but they just don't have an ISO guy at all. So a guy like Tariq Owens, who's 6'11, like I know he's a good block artist, but I just don't think he's they're going to be switching 1 through 5. I just don't think they're going to do that.
I mean, there's precedent, too, for Culver having bad days against teams that they can match up on him. Like, West Virginia shut him down.
Yeah, they went out in the they went out in the first round of the Big 12 tournament to
the quarterfinals.
Quarterfinals, all right.
And this isn't like one of Huggins' best West Virginia teams.
No, it's one of his worst. But they do have a guy who's 48% from three who Michigan will have to check, and hopefully they can't, find him in the corner over and over again in the second half.
Yeah.
And then the thing about their defense is they are a super elite effective field goal defense. So they're second, I think, in the country in 2-point D, and they're top 20 in 3-point D. And the only thing that kind of gives you a little bit of pause is they give up a ton of threes. But I think when you get to like statistical outliers, like the very best defense in the country, what's likely happening there is that they're giving up a bunch of threes that are bad threes.
Because the offense can't do anything, and the ball can't go anywhere, so it ends up 24 feet from the basket being thrown at the rim in a late shot clock.
Right, but their offense is...
We don't have that problem.
Well, their offense is also like 15 slots worse than ours. So, like, this could just...
Right, they're built... I mean, this is a team that's built on defense. They do have a nice player in Culver, but their offensive efficiency is not great for what would be a protected seed. Am I right?
Yeah, they do foul a ton. They're the 284th in free throw attempts per field goal attempts.
Free throw rate.
Let's just say that.
Yeah, that's much better, isn't it?
I like that one. Yeah, anyway, I mean, that's not dead last, but that's, within sniffing distance.
Yeah, but that's not a stat I like to see in Michigan opponents because they don't really...
draw fouls a lot?
Right, they're not driving to the basket that much, so, like, they don't get a lot of calls, I guess.
I mean, I think it's a indication that they're a little small, and when the ball gets down low, like, their answer is get under the guy. And
they're not small. I mean, they've got...
Are they deep?
I mean... Tariq Owens is the one guy, that's the transfer you're talking about, but Culver is playing power forward. He's playing the four, and he's 6'6", and then the other guys are 6'3", 6'2".
I guess they're a little small. They're not like...
I mean, they're
Montana
not...
Montana small.
No, but no, this is a major conference.
Yeah, I mean, Culver is the kind of guy whose athleticism and NBA profile means that he can play the four, and it's not like it's Zach Novak playing the four.
Right.
He's a legit college four, I would assume.
Well, and they did unseat Kansas as the Big 12 champion for the first time in forever, so it's not just a throwaway team.
Well, I mean Kansas is like a five seed this year?
Sure.
Yeah, and we're under investigation all year, so it's not like...
All right.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that Michigan is definitely going to win this game, but yeah, it's going to be a rock fight.
No, they feel like Houston last year. They're a decent team that has a guy, and we're probably going to end up tipping our cap to him at the end of the game and hopefully moving on.
We'll see. Who's a six?
Buffalo.
I'll tell you what, I watched the MAC championship game. That does not look like a MAC team.
They have four or five seniors, I think, that they start, and they can all shoot. I think they're a high-volume three shooting team.
They have some dudes that are built.
Yeah. No, they have a nice team, and they have the player of the year in the MAC, I think, Massenburg. And he was, like, they were all the... So, I think it was this team beat Arizona in the first round last year of the NCAA tournament.
Didn't just beat them.
Right. No, they but then they all came back because they were all juniors. So, that was sort of the foundation of the team. And this was sort of their flowering year. And they only lost, I think, three games. One to Marquette, where one of Marquette's players kind of went off. Another team that is, I believe, in this bracket.
God, Marquette scored 100 points on that one. 103...
Yeah, because the one dude just went nuts for Marquette.
Marcus Howard.
Yeah, Howard, that's right. But...
Yeah, the other two losses were Northern Illinois and Bowling Green, both on the road, both close, which is...
Right, but that's it. They also won at Syracuse, and they won at West Virginia. So they did... It's not like they didn't play anybody. It's a team that, like you said, it does not look like some random MAC team. And they are also, I think, the highest MAC seed or team to be seeded out of the MAC in the NCAA tournament history as a six, which is saying something. Because, I mean, we remember, like, the Wally World Miami teams, and Buffalo was kind of that, but to the next level.
They have a guy who shot 211 threes this year at 26%.
Who's that?
Jeremy Harris.
Oh, yeah. He was the guy that went off in the MAC title game. Wow. He's long. I mean, they got some long players. It's not like they're...
How do you shoot 211 threes at 26%? I don't... That's selfish, man.
Anyway, a lot of heat checks. Their coach also was the Romulus High School coach.
Yeah, I think Sam actually knows him.
Yeah, Nate Oates just got a big extension, actually. Yeah, so he's there for a little while.
We'll see if that sticks. Marquette is the five. Marquette has, as mentioned, Marcus Howard, who is also on the KenPom Player of the Year list, because he has 36% usage. Like,
that's a lot.
Yeah.
We've seen a couple of those guys.
I mean, he's just a jack it up. He has 284 attempts from three this year. that's incredible.
116 makes of those, though. I mean,
yeah, he's shooting 41%.
That's good.
horrible shots a lot.
So he's a guy that we're talking about, like, is going to draw Matthews.
Oh, hell yeah. Like, I would not... I mean, maybe he's 5'11".
Yeah, that. I mean,
oh, so maybe he's not drawing. Maybe
no.
He's,
that's the kind of guy that
he's
like
drawing X.
Yeah, X finally gets a real point guard. He can like get in the shirt of.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, high assist rate. That's a point guard.
Yeah, he's just a chucker, and he's the best chucker in the country probably this year. But you know, they looked really, really good, and then they faded hard down the stretch. So they lost to Villanova, Creighton, Seton Hall, and Georgetown all in short succession. And they pounded St. John's in the Big East tournament before losing to Seton Hall again. And, you know, a couple of those were pretty close. But, you know, I think they might have been headed for a much better seed if they had kind of maintained.
Yeah, and it wasn't an injury loss or anything like that, too. It was just...
No, they just kind of faded. And when you're so dependent on one player like Marquette is, that can happen. The four is...
Our old friends from last year.
Florida State.
Oh, yeah. The Ents.
The Ents. Well, one of the Ents transferred.
They still got a couple of them.
They still have the 7'4".
Yeah, I was about to say, isn't one of them like 7+?
They still have Christ
7'4".
Kumbaje, and they still have Mifiondu Kabengele.
Nicely done.
Thank you. And
Terrence Mann, I still like
their
that.
Their block rate is just 30 seconds, so that's actually a little bit of a surprise.
Mifiondu has been a really good player this year. He's the guy who kind of won out that job, and he's progressed to the point where he's a real center now.
They also beat Virginia.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
And not, like, Tippin beat them, but they beat him by, like, 10 points.
Wasn't that a horrible shooting game for Virginia, though?
I mean, it could have been, but, I mean, you can see where a team like Florida State would force you into not a great shooting game.
I mean, if you saw last year's Florida State, you pretty much know the score here. They're 12th in average height. They can't shoot. Like, they're in the 200s and three-point percentage.
Didn't they have a guy that could get to the rim, or a couple guys that they could do that they gave Michigan some problems?
They have a couple of guys here, but, like, it's telling that KenPom brings up a guy playing 43% of their minutes as a starter. So they rotate through this really big bench, and they don't really have a go-to guy unless Kabengele's on the floor, and he's only getting 20 minutes a game. So they have kind of this, we've got the 7'4 guy on the floor. Hopefully we can get through this 16 minutes a game without falling behind.
I mean, they're a team I like having in the bracket because they can knock down big teams. Like, they could knock off Gonzaga.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Like, if Gonzaga comes up and against a team that's just like all over the place. And I just remember last year's Florida State game, it was just a thicket of arms.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like every Florida State player had six arms. And it was very frustrating.
Wasn't it a really like low scoring game too? And it was just like,
it was right after the Texas Tech game or the Texas A&M game where we're like, we shot the lights out and we're like, ooh, now we can shoot threes, and then we'll just never mind.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that they could get into an ugly slugfest with Gonzaga and take them out, and then Michigan could get into an ugly slugfest with them and win.
So there's a lot of really good defenses.
Yes. This is Florida State has the number 9 defense in the country.
Yeah. And so Texas Tech obviously is high.
This is going to be a competitive, if not particularly attractive, bracket.
And Syracuse, as we mentioned, is just a weird matchup. So you have, what, 4 or 5 teams in this quad, I guess, as you'd call it, that could just suck the life out of any offensive basketball game.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about Gonzaga is that they do have the number one tippy-top offense in the country because they're shooting 62% from two.
Well, they might need it.
But, like, with so much of their offense against Portland and Santa Clara.
Right, they haven't gone up against a 7-4 guy yet.
Right, like they might be vulnerable to that. I mean, they put up 89 against Duke, so I'm not saying that like it's a guarantee.
And that wasn't that Duke's only loss with Zion?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, depending if you count the first North Carolina game, him playing in it or not.
I would count. I would not count him.
No, yeah.
I'm done. I think there's enough Zion talk outside of this room that we can.
I think Brian said in that this is a Zion-free zone. The MGO podcast.
Apologies.
Well, I mean, if you look at Gonzaga's non-conference schedule, they really loaded it up, but it didn't actually come off. So they play Texas A&M, Illinois, and Arizona. So, yeah.
And all those teams
are bad.
Yeah.
And they get Duke, and they beat Duke. And then they have Creighton, who's kind of a disappointment this year, and Washington, Pac-12 team.
Who they beat, and who's in the tournament.
Yeah. They're 11 seed or whatever.
Eight.
Whatever. And they lose to Tennessee and North Carolina in fairly competitive games.
It's amazing that someone can be the Boise State of basketball this long. Like, they have the one big game, and they just hang their hat on that and play nobody for 3 months.
I mean, they have a really good coach, right?
Yeah, and they...
I mean, everyone has kind of tried to go get him, and he's just been like, nah, I'm good.
They've really exploited a recruiting inefficiency by just recruiting across the ocean. So they get guys from Japan, they get guys from Europe, and that's what they do.
St. Mary's does that too a little bit.
Yes, they get a bunch of Australians.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's an interesting approach.
Yeah.
I wish Michigan would do it a little bit more. All right, let's take a break. Come back. All right, we'll talk about it.
In most good movies, there's a hero and a coach. You are the hero like Luke Skywalker. We are your coach like Yoda. It's Nick Hopwood from
Peak Wealth Management.
Your MGO financial coach. Learn more at peakwm.com/mgoblog. I'm the CFP who coaches people just like you. We both hate going to weddings on Michigan football Saturdays. And just like Luke, most of you need a little bit of coaching and guidance. And to qualify as a coach needs to have empathy and authority. Yoda has empathy because he's been battling the Sith for hundreds of years. We have empathy because we've seen people we care about making terrible financial decisions, putting their retirement at risk. Yoda has authority because he's arguably the most powerful Jedi of all time. We have authority because we have an economics degree from Michigan, we are a CFP, we have 20 years in the business, and we manage over 145 million of client assets, and we've seen hundreds of cases. You are the hero, and we are your financial coach. If you're ready for a second opinion about your financial future, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog today.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis, to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
So Michigan loses to Michigan State 65-60 in another game that has the same frickin' script as the other two, where Michigan has a second half lead of some note.
It's like they keep on remaking the worst Star Wars.
And there was just this period in the second half where every single shot was terrible hot garbage. Like, there was probably seven or eight shots in a row where it was like, oh, here's a step back three from Poole. Here's a step back three from Brazdeikis. Here's Charles Matthews taking a fadeaway long two. And at no point did anyone, like, pass. It looked like we were Syracuse all of a sudden.
Oh. Did you think any of that had to do with Tillman being back in the game and them trying to go 1-5 and they couldn't? And so then you get stuck and now all of a sudden there's 8 seconds on the shot clock?
I mean, some of these were not 8 seconds on the shot clock, but like also like, you know, you got to switch and you got to at least try to attack it. Like maybe Tillman is a guy who's going to be there and you aren't going to put up a shot. But like if you drive past him, like there's a good chance that you're going to unbalance the defense and then you can move it around and you can find a shot. And instead, it's just all this, like, this is the second Michigan State game where they had to pull Jordan Poole off the floor because he just didn't, because he's just not mature enough
to
play.
And that was maybe even on the defensive end, too. Like, it wasn't just...
Well, what happened when they pulled him is, like, he has this awful, awful three where he's got a mismatch, and he's just putting it up, and it's like a brick, and then they get transition, and they get an and one.
Yeah.
And that's when they pull him off the floor, and I'm like, yeah, we got to get Eli out here because he might not be able to score efficiently, but he's not going to do that.
What about playing your three wings like you talked about?
I mean, Matthews was a complete offensive non-entity in this game.
Sure, but like, defensively, he's not going to leave his feet and foul guys.
I mean, I guess, but like, I mean, Matthews had 3 shots in 21 minutes, and all three of them were twos.
No, you're right.
Like,
he wasn't a help on offense.
No, that, you know, that kind of blipped in the tournament last year. It's like, okay, Matthews is a good offensive player now. No.
Or he found a couple go-to moves. But
right, and now his go-to move is like, I'm going to take the worst shot in basketball, a contested fall-away two. And that's like his...
That's his shot.
And like, there
that's
were,
his shot.
On all three of those shots, like, as soon as he started dribbling, I was like, this is going up. And there's no defensive rotation. There's no opportunity for anyone to get an offensive rebound. It's just... This is going up.
He's got tools down there, too. Like, we've seen him pivot around. We've seen him do some cool stuff before.
I mean, whatever it is, he just decided that all he was going to do was take step-back jumpers this year. And it's pretty frustrating because he's, like, Michigan's highest usage guy.
Not anymore. Iggy passed him.
Well,
that's kind of mind-blowing.
It is mind-blowing that he's, like, a 25% usage guy, and he's got an O rating under 100.
And you just kind of wonder how that happens in a beeline offense. And you can understand why a guy like Poole might be, because it's a shooter's offense, and he's a guy that can do multiple different things on the offensive end. But Matthews doesn't seem like that kind of guy in this offense at all.
Michigan's offense is they get down the court, they'll run a play, and then if that doesn't work, then they have a couple things they can go to. They can put it up to Simpson and have him go and do his hook shot thing. They don't really dump it down.
Well, I mean, the thing about Simpson is he's progressed.
Yeah.
He's a little bit better of a three-point shooter. He's improved his free throws. He's added the hook shot. He's a much better player than last year. I don't think you can say that about Matthews. Matthews is exactly what he was last year, except he's not getting to the rim like at all.
He is not getting to the rim, it seems, yes.
He got to the rim fairly frequently last year, and this year it's just like, no, I'm going to take this jumper.
Do you think that's people recognizing that this is what he does, and so now you're putting him in a position where that's all he can do?
I don't know.
I mean, we saw like multiple clips in the Big Ten season about where coaches are yelling at their players, he can only go right, he can only go right, he can only go right.
Yeah.
So
that was against FSU last year that I think he actually finally went left.
Well, I mean, he also like had a couple of nice moments against A&M, and he was, it looked like he had diversified his game, where it was like, all right, sometimes I'm going to take this fall away jumper, but also sometimes I'm going to go up and under and I'm going to get to the rim, and that's just gone. So he plays 21 minutes and Michigan is switching offense for defense, and they're bringing in Livers because Matthews can't get anything done. So that's really disappointing. So that was the hero ball section of the game. And I mean, Michigan just can't cope with teams that can switch 1-5.
And they can't, I mean, we saw Iggy try an entry pass, and it was not great. They got a couple down there to him, and X went over the top a couple times. But for the most part, like you said, they just can't exploit that. And that's what you have to do when teams do that, is you have to dominate that matchup. Because that's what the mismatch, I mean, sports are all about mismatches. And when you find something when a team takes something that you like to do away, and that's what it is, and you can't exploit it, what do you do? I mean, nothing.
I think one of the things that really hurts is that Michigan only has one guy who can pass. Like, Iggy can't pass.
Well, not yet, no.
Oh, God, he had awful pass today.
Poole's had his moments, but Matthews, like, every once in a while, but, like...
Yeah, especially in an offense that is a fluid ball movement offense, and you have one guy that consistently passes the ball.
And it's just frustrating, because they've done this all three games this year, and, you know, Michigan made some hay when Tillman was out of the game, and they had Kithier and Ward on the floor, and that was like, all right, now we can do some work. But like, I wonder what Michigan's points per possession were with him on and off.
That is so crazy, because Michigan State didn't realize that they had one of the better players in the Big Ten until their own player potentially hurt himself, and now...
Well, when Ward was in there and they're dumping it down to him in the post, I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Because you know the ball is going up, and you know that at best he's going to hit half of them, and probably not even that. And
he had, I think, one, maybe two, but I mean...
They were bouncing in, but they were bad shots. They were like going off the rim a few times. Like, if they wanted to go take those shots all game, it'll be like the Minnesota game.
Like, every post up against Teske was a blessing. And then they just went away from it, and Michigan overreacted to the pick and roll stuff, and McQuaid was open in the corner basically the whole second half. The worst one was when like two guys were flying out of him and they were both way too late, and I was like,
which one? There were twice. That happened twice.
Yeah,
and that was Brooks, because that was when Poole was off the floor, because I think the previous possession maybe had fouled McQuaid.
Oh yeah,
I'm not going to miss playing that guy.
You know, Iggy is a freshman, and that'll happen, and Poole is sophomore, so there's like some kind of wiggle in there, but yeah, this is pretty frustrating watching those two guys give McQuaid almost all of his open threes. And I know you got kind of tagged down so that Tillman doesn't get a dunk, but like,
is that because of switching? I mean, because at some point I was like, geez, could you bring Matthews in and have him check McQuaid
cope with everything else? Michigan plays their defense. They'll rotate a little bit over to that side.
That's how everybody plays defense. It's just that their timing was off, and they were. You know, the first time it happens, it's like, all right, they brought something new out after halftime. But then, like, the fourth time it happens, you're just kind of like, what are we doing here?
I mean, it puts you in a terrible position, because Winston can get the ball over there so fast that, like, it's really hard to you have to play like, so far out, you're giving them a huge lane.
I don't know about that. I just think that Michigan...
It's almost like they lost these games mentally a lot of times. Like, they play decently well through some tough circumstances, and they're winning, 25 minutes into every game, and then someone flips a switch, and it's like they just go deadpan
lose their mind.
Yeah, and it's crazy, because it's happened three times now, and it's kind of almost been the same thing, where it's like you have mental errors on defense, and then offense, it's like everybody just gets a deer in the headlights.
Have you watched Michigan State this year, though? They've done that to everybody.
Well,
this is what Michigan State does. And they have their bubble butt period with Nick Ward. And
not
then,
Indiana.
You know what? Indiana is just not center, but they have length all over the place. But they kind of...
You made a good point, though, Seth, and that's just kind of what I'm coming to, is like Michigan State does the exact things that confound Michigan, and they haven't found a way to take advantage of that one loophole, which is getting the ball into their 7-1 guy on mismatches and having him just murder somebody over and over again. Because that's it. That's how you stop this.
They tried it with Iggy, but Iggy couldn't get the... I mean, well, he couldn't pass it well enough to get there.
Well, it's clear that Michigan needs to spend the offseason working on entering, feeding the post. And that's a weakness that Michigan has always had, but in previous years, when you're switching that 1-5, like, you know, Mo can go drag a point guard out to the 3-point line and just shoot over him.
Yeah.
Or Derek Walton can just pull up from three against, you know, a 7-1 guy who's not going to be able to check him. So we don't have a pull-up three shooter at point guard. We have a very suboptimal three-point shooter at point guard, and we don't know how to feed the post. So Teskey's not going to back a guy down from the perimeter. He needs to be fed.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, never seen
him. I mean, I don't know, man. The jump is, he keeps making.
I mean, but that's the weakness that has been identified in Michigan's offense, is if you are able to switch 1-5, it's curtains. It's game over.
I mean, hats off to them. Tillman is the only guy who's been able to do that this year to them.
Yeah. Well, and we can't not mention
the end.
I mean, so Michigan's down 3, and Michigan State has a foul to give, and Poole does a really smart thing. When he's fouled, he shoots the ball.
Right.
Intentionally fouled. When Cassius Winston reaches out with two hands and shoves him, he puts the ball up. And for the second time this year, we've had someone intentionally fouling.
And not get called.
And not get called for it. Once it was Iggy, and that hurt Michigan because we were trying to foul Hap. He had the ball. Iggy grabs him, and the refs are like, whatever. And this one, it's just... And there's a bunch of people on Twitter like, we shouldn't talk about the refs when we talk about this. It's a 3-point game. And how many free throws is a 3-pointer worth if you're fouled on it, Seth?
Three.
So, like, people are talking about how, like, you know, Michigan State just won this game. I'm like, dude, they weren't up 12. You know, they weren't up 15 points. They were up 3 points.
I mean, all these things matter. All these things matter at a certain level. Because this call was at the end of the game, it's very fresh in your mind. That's like,
Well, I mean, this wasn't like the other two games where Michigan just got boned on a bunch of calls. Like, you know, they basically let the two teams play. They didn't foul out Iggy in 22 minutes. Last year at Breslin, Michigan State was in the bonus in the first 5 minutes of both halves.
Right.
Like, this wasn't that. This was a pretty well-officiated game until, like, the last 4 minutes because, you know, Teskey's going up for a possible offensive rebound.
And
he's being, there's a hook and hold on him.
Yeah, I saw the replay and I was like, that's
and do you remember they fouled Iggy out on way less than that.
That's supposedly like a point of emphasis this year for a flagrant one.
For a flagrant one, yeah.
And they don't call it on the floor. They don't call it on the review.
Yeah.
They just let it go. And people on, there's like the daily writers are like, we shouldn't talk about the referees as if.
Oh, they're young.
Well, it's just, no.
Do you still think that they need to get jobs newspapers? No,
there are newspaper people writing the View from Nowhere were talking about the referees is gauche because they're probably right. Like, okay, buddies. Like, come on. it's an intentional foul. They're intentionally fouling. And, you know. At the very least, you have to call the foul and then be like, no shot.
Right, right.
Which is the coward's way out. Also, a far better thing than what actually happened.
And it would have been a very easy thing to call. Like, you're the referee in that situation. You know they have a foul to give. You're expecting them to do that.
To give the foul.
Right.
And then they do.
Right.
Like, sometimes there are anticipation calls that are wrong because the referee expects something, and then that doesn't happen.
So you think the referee
the referee had to be anticipating the call, and then it happened.
Don't anticipate. Don't anticipate. All right, I didn't anticipate.
I mean, I don't even know what to do with that because that's
it's really frustrating because it was a great game. This was the best conference in the country this year. These are the best two teams by far in the conference. And it's to have that be the end of the game, now it becomes the same rigmarole between Michigan and Michigan State fans. Ah, that was a terrible call. You guys complain about the refs all the time. I don't know how many Michigan State fans you know, but they all sound like that.
Zero Michigan State fans.
Well, they all talk like this.
All right, I believe that.
Yeah. And that's what they do. They'll poke you and say, like, how come you guys always complain about the refs? How come you don't? It's all about refs to you guys, isn't it? There's psychological words that I'm not allowed to use for this.
All right. Well, whatever. It's just I don't know how you look at that and you're like, well, the refs played no role in that outcome. Like, they obviously did. It was a 3-point game. I mean, Michigan's chances of winning were not good, even if they do get that call, because Poole's an 81% shooter. He's got to hit all three, and then they go to overtime, maybe. So it's not like Michigan's win percentage was particularly high there, but it was like 20%, and they just wiped that out.
That's my only thing. If it was a 50-50 game, literally like a tie game, or Michigan is down one or something in that situation, then I would be a little more frustrated. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong.
20% of the game is a huge...
I'm pretty pissed off about a 20% win percentage getting wiped off the
board. I understand, and you can be. I'm not telling you not to be. I was just frustrated because I watched Michigan just self-destruct again, and then they got in a position, and yeah, it would have been nice to get that call, and maybe he hits the free throws, and maybe they stop Michigan State, but you know, I mean, Teske blocked the shot that went into the basket for the lead, so I mean, that to me is more frustrating, that you can get the Winston layup at the end,
sure,
he blocks it, and it goes off the backboard and in, and well, you're kind of like...
that's just frustrating, it's not someone...
Well, that's what I said, I was frustrated.
It's not someone blowing it. It's not someone watching something that should be obvious to anyone who's ever seen a basketball game and fucking it up.
Then they have a chance to tie the game and don't really get a great shot again. And it was just kind of like, this is what our offense just boils down to.
All right,
and
so we can complain about our offense, but the offense is...
We've already done that.
We've done that. Okay? That's part of the...
But I'm not trying to go back to it. I'm saying that's where
the thing is, with the officiating, there's never any culpability for this.
Accountability.
Well, yes, fine. There's never any accountability. Okay? No, the Big Ten is never going to say, yeah, you know what, these guys kind of flubbed it up at the end. It happens. We apologize to Michigan. That was a bad call. Or make the official explain why he made the call. Like, one of the worst calls that...
What is the explanation going to be?
I mean, I don't
think reaching out with two hands and intentionally fouling someone is a foul.
I screwed up,
yeah, well.
I would appreciate an I screwed up from them because the coaches have to go in front of a camera and say I screwed up even when they didn't.
It's just frustrating because every time Michigan goes to Breslin, they get absolutely rogered. Like, and it's a fact.
Like, I'm so ready for the day that, like, I can be graceful on Twitter and be like, yeah, you know, the officials bailed us out on that one. Like, I'm still telling Illinois fans all the time, like, yeah, they in 2000, Anthony Thomas fumbled, and yeah, you guys should have had that.
He did fumble that one.
Yeah. But, like, that's how far back I have to go to remember a time when Michigan was the one on the other side going, yeah, we got a gift there.
I think there was a Northwestern football game.
Oh, of course there was. Poor Northwestern.
Yeah. All right. Next segment. This segment's over.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Passion for e-commerce. Sell stuff online. Security. Performance. Conversion. Beautiful user experiences. Belle expérience utilisateur. Monthly marketing. PPC SEO. Make your user a customer. Conversion. Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Element show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
All right, well, the other two games in the tournament were more pleasant. Blowouts of Minnesota and Iowa. Not really a whole lot to say about the Minnesota game. I mean, they came in, they'd already played two games. One of them went to overtime. Coffey hadn't come off the floor. They didn't have Matt Stockman. So, that was their only real bench player that they were, who was playing at all well.
Well, they stuck Isaiah Washington out there. That guy is a...
Yes, he's a disaster artist, but that was well after the game was just over.
Right.
So Michigan just comes out and blitzes them, and they look like they're just dead tired. So, I mean, Z was fantastic in this game.
He was fantastic in both.
He was fantastic the whole tournament. Like,
yeah. He set the record for most assists in a tournament, and he did it in three games.
30 assists and two turnovers.
And this was the game where they were trying to, like, get him to break the record for a game. And, like,
oh, yeah.
Because remember, there was one where Livers just puts it up early in the clock, even when they're, you know, trying to run down the clock. And
because
Raftery was the one who said, like, oh, yeah, they're trying to get
this. Because Z had passed it to him.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was good to see Michigan just blow the doors off Iowa. Because Iowa is a team that has given them a lot of trouble in the past few years. And they came in and, you know, that one was over pretty quickly. Even though Michigan had this weird defensive cross match going on.
Yeah, you tweet about this.
Where they put Iggy on Garza and they put Teske on Cook.
Right.
None of that made any sense to me. Like, someone tweeted at me, well, they don't want to get Teske in foul trouble. And I'm like...
No, I tweeted back at that guy. I was like, what are you talking about? Cook is like the foul king of the Big Ten.
Right. And so, like, that. So you put Teske on a bad matchup for him who's great at drawing fouls. And Teske is playing him pretty soft because he doesn't want to pick up a foul.
Right.
And then Garza is just too big for Iggy. So... Teske got matched on Garza for one of his attempts in the first half, and he got blocked.
Right.
And fell over, and Michigan got a transition bucket. And then I think Garza scored on every single one of his other possessions in the first half.
Including, like, his putbacks and
stuff.
Yeah,
he was 6 of 8, but he had 2 offensive rebounds, and I think he immediately put both of those back because he's just way too big for Iggy.
Right.
And they changed that in the second half, and then it was game over, like, as soon as they stopped doing that. I mean, they're up 13 at the half, so they had obviously out. But, like, can you imagine how bad Iowa would have been playing if they hadn't had that cross match? Because those guys had, like, all their first half points.
Yeah.
They had all their points just in general, almost.
Well, Iowa didn't make a three until walk-on time. Yeah, and, like, the right. Three that they did make went off every part of the backboard, hit a rabbit, and then went in.
We needed a ruling on this one, too, by the way, David. Is this a sad three?
I mean, I said no, because it's a walk-on. His job is to shoot. I don't care. If you bring in a walk-on, a sad thing is when you're trying to, like, create something that is never really going to happen. And I'm never going to blame, like, walk-on.
Is that the definition? Because, like,
it's kind of like...
Sad field goals were, like, the sad...
Yeah, but was that the backup walk-on kicker? Because if it was, then I'm not going to blame him. I'm not going to blame, like, a...
They're all backup walk-on kickers.
A sad touchdown is kind of like the Wisconsin one where they've already given up and they've on a couple of drives, and then they've punted on a 3-possession game with 7 minutes to go, and then they go hurry up when they're down 4 or 5 scores.
The Brady Hoke.
Yeah. That's a sad touchdown. That would be... And this is...
So we're
this
trying.
Is,
we're not actually trying.
So a sad three would be like the shot clock's turned off, the game's over, and you take a shot at the end of the clock to and it goes in.
And you're a starter. Right. Or you're a guy who's getting like a three-point shooter or something. Like if the walk-ons
were getting out there too, knowing like we haven't made a three, like let's not get blanked on three.
That's why it's not sad, because the guy's like, I want to get on the score sheet, I want to make a shot. CJ Baird's never gonna, I mean, none of those are gonna be like sad threes or anything.
Well, if CJ Baird shot that in like a game where we were getting blown out by 40 and that's why he's out there.
No, it's not a sad three.
No one's going to be like, hey, you remember that CJ Baird three?
You asked me for a ruling and I'm saying that if you're a walk-on,
okay,
shoot the ball.
So I agree with that. Also because the culture of basketball is like you're still playing, right?
Yeah.
Until the shot clock's turned off, you're running offense, you're going to put a shot up.
Yeah.
Like Michigan has had their walk-ons put shot ups and that's what you do. So if it is a little bit of a sad three, just because it was the first one they made.
It was
by a definition of sad that not, you know, you shouldn't be doing, you shouldn't be trying this. But a definition of just like, oh, that's a three, too bad for them. It was a Rutgers three,
right? That's a different kind of it was, three, like we're talking about,
right,
sad one,
a,
like
it's
I
a
said.
Three, like
if Brandon Johns puts up a three, that's different. You know, because like he gets buckets at the end of games and in walk-on time, he's like dunking over like a backup like shooting guard, and you're kind of like
I liken
right.
it to like when we're playing Rutgers once. And trying to well, figure out which fullback twice. Hasn't had a touchdown yet, well. And then they get their first down. That's what it was like.
Yeah, I'm not gonna fault the kid.
Minnesota was also like 0-for.
You know what they were? You know what
second half?
The first two games. You know what opponents were from three?
Not good.
3 of 28.
Yeah, that's bad.
I mean, that was... They weren't just, like, missing easy threes. They were having to take bad threes when they could take them, and most of the time they're getting run off the line.
No, yeah. I mean, both those teams missed their fair share of open threes, but...
Not
a couple,
really.
But...
No.
Most of those were pretty heavily contested.
Yeah.
But, anyway, those games are in the past.
Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I'm David Nasternak, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. Final ruling says, not a sad three.